Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 4, Text 32. Translation. There are two parties, namely the theist and the atheist. The theist, who accepts the supersoul, finds the spiritual cause through mystic yoga. The Sankhyite, however, who merely analyzes the material elements, comes to a conclusion of impersonalism and does not accept a supreme cause, whether Bhagavan, Paramatma, or even Brahman. Instead, he is preoccupied with the superfluous, external activities of material nature. Ultimately, however, both parties demonstrate the absolute truth, because although they offer opposing statements, their object is the same ultimate cause. They are both approaching the same Supreme Brahman, to whom I offer my respectful obeisances. Please repeat. There are two parties put by Srila Prabhupada. Actually, there are two sides of this argument. Some people say that the Absolute has no form, nirakar, and others say that the Absolute has a form, sarakar. Therefore, the word form is the common factor. This is interesting, Srila Prabhupada's argument, following the mood here of the verse, that nirakar, no form. Saraka has form, hasn't got form, has no form. He's saying both are talking about the same form. One says no and one says yes. So he's pointing out very cleverly here that they're both from different sides, different points of view. Their subject matter is the same. They demonstrate the absolute truth. Because even if you have to say he has no form, you're identifying him. And if you say he has form, you're confirming him. If you say there's nothing, then the person who's saying there's something, you're both talking about a thing. No thing, a thing. Something, nothing. So Srila Prabhupada is taking this argument very cleverly to begin his purport. He says that the common word, nothing, something, with form, no form, is thing or form. So he says the common factor, although some accept it, astika, asti and others, astika, they don't accept. Whereas others try to negate nasti or nastika. So there's astika, nastika. Since the devotees consider the word form, akar, the common factor of both, he offers his respectful obeisances to the form. Although others may go on arguing about whether the Absolute has a form or not. So there was one word that struck me, or there was many words actually that struck me in this particular verse. But one of them I thought that struck me first was describing the Sankhyite is that he is preoccupied with the superfluous. Preoccupied with the superficial, in other words. So in, I don't know about in India, but in the West, if you say to somebody, you're a very superficial person, the person takes it as a highly offensive thing to say. It means you're shallow. You're not very intelligent, actually, because you can only see just the surface of a subject. You can't penetrate deeply into it. So if you want to insult someone, you say, I think you're very superficial. So Srila Prabhupada here, he's minimizing the position of the Sankhyaite, who of course the Sankhya philosophers are extremely deep, you could say. Their study of Sankhya philosophy and the meaning of Sankhya philosophy is not something superficial. But he uses this word superficial and preoccupied, distracted by the superficial, to explain why they're only studying the outer. They're only studying the nature of the material nature. What is this? Neti, neti. It's not this. The absolute is not this, not this, not this, not this. They're studying in this way. Whereas the theist, this is the atheist, and he comes to the conclusion of atheism. You'll see all over the world philosophers and people who are interested in deeply studying, deeply learned people. Srila Prabhupada once said, he said, if you get too much knowledge, you will end up an impersonalist. So generally, when you meet very learned people worldwide, you'll find that they have come to the conclusion of impersonalism. Because they've become so vastly, elaborately learned and developed their intelligence so much that the simplicity, the profound simplicity of Krishna consciousness will be dismissed by them as something a bit naive. Because you fellows don't have the ability to penetrate deeply into the meaning of so many things. So you accept this sentimental, this mainly for women and people who don't have this power, you accept that. Never mind, we feel sorry for you. And similarly, we feel sorry for them. Now here, as we read on, you'll see that this theist that Srila Prabhupada is talking about, who accepts the super soul and finds the spiritual cause through mystic yoga, is not us. We'll continue. In this verse, the word yoga shankayo is very important. Yoga means bhakti yoga. Now here again, listen to Srila Prabhupada's brilliant presentation. I was thinking when I was reading this earlier that sometimes for some people, Srila Prabhupada's purports can be quite annoying. And I was thinking, why is that? And the analogy that came to my mind is that, say, for a materialistic person, if they go to see the cinema and they sit down next to another person who's seen this film before, and they're sitting there, and the person says, and there's a very happy wedding taking place, and everybody is being moved by the picture and what they're hearing. And this man says very cynically, "Ah, don't worry, in about 10 minutes he'll be dead. And she'll run away with another man." And the person feels so disturbed. "Why did you tell me that? You know, I'm just appreciating this wonderful moment." But the other person has seen it already. And so they know what the next 10 minutes, they know the end even. They know that at the end this will happen and that will happen. So perhaps they should remain silent so that the person can experience and taste and go through the whole experience of life or the movie. But because this person sees an urgency in waking up the bewildered viewer, for some reason or another, he keeps saying, "Ah, this is all just a bunch of rubbish. Don't believe him. His business will fail. Everything will go wrong. His sons and daughters will leave him because he's seen the movie already." So Srila Prabhupada, he has come to the highest conclusion of yoga. So therefore he takes this highest concept and he brings it down to the level where most people are, to help them to come up to this highest point. Because without that, they will think of yoga, hatha yoga, and they will take that in a capsule, and it won't bring them any closer to the absolute truth. So Prabhupada says, yoga means bhakti yoga, because yogis also accept the existence of the all-pervading supersoul, and they try to see that supersoul within their hearts. So this is actually the perfection of the yoga process. And then he quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, "Dhyana vastita tad gatena manasa pasyanti yam yogina." The devotee tries to come directly in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the yogi tries to find the supersoul within the heart by meditation. So this is Srila Prabhupada in his early days of preaching in America. He was speaking to these cultured, materialistic Western ladies, and he was explaining to them that actually, do you know the purpose of yoga? And of course they're all doing hatha yoga and they're all given an impersonalist philosophy to go along with it. So Srila Prabhupada starts quoting. There's this book, a very famous book. You know, it is written by two very well-known scholars in Bengal. It is called The Science of Yoga. He doesn't quote Bhagavad Gita because they're not up to that point. He quotes authorities that they are familiar with. And he explains to them a simple point, not everything. He explains to them one thing, that yoga is meant for meditation on the super soul within. All the processes of nyas and or pratyahara and everything are meant to calm down the mind and to discipline the body so that one can sit for long periods of time in meditation. And then what does one meditate on? One meditates on the paramatma or the super soul within. So he was using their books of authority to convince them of this one point, that this is the goal of yoga. All yoga is meant for this. So he says, thus both directly and indirectly, yoga means bhakti yoga. Yoga means bhakti yoga. This is the conclusion. He's sitting beside us telling us what happens at the very end of the movie. After you've done your hatha yoga and your yoga and yoga and yoga and yoga, your raj yoga and your saman yoga and so many new yogas that they are providing for people who actually want something less, he's telling them, no, but actually yoga, the word yoga means bhakti yoga. Not that bhakti yoga is a type of yoga. Yoga means bhakti yoga. So he's taking them to the concluding point. Now he'll compare this. Sankhya, however, or philosophical knowledge or speculation, means physical study of the cosmic situation through speculative knowledge. This is generally known as Jnana Shastra. Now, generally with devotees who are practicing bhakti yoga, when you start talking about Jnana Shastra, they all get very sleepy because we're not so much interested in this. We don't have a taste for taking apart all the elements of life and looking at each one. Just like you'll find there are persons who have a nature to be disposed towards mechanics and engineering. And from a young age, they will take a computer, and rather than use the computer, they will like to take it apart. And they get great satisfaction from seeing how that part, you put it there and it works. You take it from there and put it there, something else happens. But the average common person, they don't find any interest in that. They haven't any qualification for that. They simply take the article and they use it. So likewise, we take the material world and we use it as best we can in Krishna's service. And we don't have so much predilection for hearing about all the different elements and how they combine. But if you have a big, big buddhi and you have an impersonal, atheistic point of view, you have to do something with this great intelligence. And so the best thing to do is study this world because you have no other world. So you must study this world. So they study. They study from the gross, and then more and more and more subtle and subtle. And as you get more subtle, there is no proof, no conclusive proof that what you're thinking and saying is the absolute truth. As it gets more subtle, it becomes actually more subjective, more theoretical. And this is where the speculation comes in. And this is where each person uses their own intelligence. And just as we heard yesterday, each person has a different view and they become bewildered in this way. And they argue backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. And there's no possibility of a conclusion. And that's why every year when I've come to India for the last 34 years, I've seen new billboards with new mystic yogis with long hair and new Baal Krishnas and new this and new Amas and new ladies, new this, new that. New billboards come up, and Srila Prabhupada would say that this is one of the things in India. This is they're very good at producing incarnations or yogis or mystical personalities who can give you something beyond the ordinary. And then there are always people with simple faith or with an inclination in that direction who will follow these people. But we're very firm on this. We want proof. So Srila Prabhupada would say, okay, he says he is an incarnation of God. Let him show, just as Krishna did when Arjuna was very skeptical. I'm skeptical. Let him show his universal form to me. And if I see how he is actually pervading everything, then I will have to consider what he's saying. But if in fact he has some mortal characteristics that are not so dissimilar from, say, an important man or a significant person in this world, then I will have to consider it further. There was a situation when we were in 1974 in Hong Kong. There was one yogi who was very popular at that time, perhaps not at all well known now. His name was forgotten his name. That's how important he was. Anyway, he presented himself as Bal Krishna. And he was very, very well known, and he was going here and there around in America and so on and so forth. And he had just come through Hong Kong. And so there was a lot of interest from the press. So when Srila Prabhupada was asked about this yogi, he asked, they were asking, what do you think about him? And Srila Prabhupada at first, he didn't say anything. He said he was very avoiding the situation. But they pushed him. And so he made a very, very firm statement that he is simply a cheater. And then the press became very attracted to this because here is some kind of controversy that they can take advantage of. And Srila Prabhupada made a point. He said, we have heard that when he was in India, he had to go to the dentist. Does God have to go to a dentist? Just think for a minute. Does God have to go to the dentist? We go to the dentist and we consider it important. But why would God have to go to the dentist? Where is his absolute power? If he has to go and get someone to put their glove-covered fingers into his mouth to fix up his teeth, what kind of a God is this? So Srila Prabhupada made this so, he would get so strong on these points. And those who didn't have a very clear concept of the absolute truth, they would become a bit confused and think, why is he so adamant on this point? Yes, I hear, heard him, but why does he go on and on and on? Why does he get so angry? A sadhu should not get angry. But Srila Prabhupada would get, he would go from very, very calm to fiery angry when he would be speaking on this subject matter of an imposter, an impersonalist, who would claim to be God, but he would show all the tendencies of being a mortal jiva with some powers, no doubt, but not being the absolute personality. So Srila Prabhupada here, he says that the Shankarites are attached to the impersonal Brahman, but the absolute truth is known in three ways. Brahmeti, Parametmi, Bhagavan, Iti, Sabjate. The absolute truth is one, but some accept him as impersonal Brahman, some as the Supersoul existing everywhere, and some as Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The central point is the absolute truth. So this is another point that I sometimes think of, because over the years of speaking and giving class and hearing class, we tend sometimes to we accept concepts, words, and we speak them back to people. This is preaching. But sometimes the concepts become a little hackneyed. We just think, I just say that, that's it. I say, this is the absolute truth. And the person we're speaking to doesn't have any kind of interest in these terms, the absolute truth. What does the absolute truth mean? They're not thinking in terms of the absolute truth. Or in other words, they don't have a conception. And our conception of the absolute truth may also not be very well developed. It may be just a term that we use, like there's a computer language and there's so many industrial languages that go along with a particular career. So we can say these terms. The central point is the absolute truth. But we may not know deeply what we're speaking about. So I was thinking of this word absolute. What does absolute mean? What words do we have here? Any? Transcends dualities. All contradictions are resolved. What else? Absolute. Even if it's not truth, it's just absolute. What does it mean? Only one. Absolute. Only one. No changes in the absolute. Anything else? No competition to the absolute. Why is there no competition to the absolute? What was that? Because he's only one. What does it mean, only one? So nobody can compare. Why? But what does it mean that it's only one? Full, yes. A couple of words that came to my mind to complement the words that have been given was it is complete. So if something is complete, then there's everything is within it. So if everything is within it, there's nothing outside of it to compete with it. It's complete. And the other word that came to my mind was whole. It's the whole truth. There's nothing more than that. So we're saying absolute means whole or full or one. What does the word truth mean? It does not change. It's eternal. The truth is eternal. When we use the word truth in day-by-day life, we talk about the truth. What does it mean? Reality. Yes, what really happened. If you say to someone, is this the truth? You're asking them, did this really happen? Always. Always. Yeah, no amendment. If it's the truth, no amendment. Very good. You can't say, this was the truth today, but tomorrow we're going to add a few things and we're going to top it up a bit, or we're going to jazz it up a little bit for the modern society is not so interested in this, so we're going to add a few more, frills and some more elements, and then we will keep going with our absolute truth. No, it has to be whole. That means that everything has to be inside of it. The absolute truth. And relative truth, what does relative mean? We all have relatives. What are they? They're related to something else. Relative. What about relative? What does relative mean? Yes, there's a common factor in a relative. Like if I say, this is my son and this is my daughter, I'm saying they're related to me. They're my relatives. I'm the common factor. They're related to me in this way. But I cannot say, my son can become your son because he's my son. So I can say that today is a very pleasant day. The weather is very nice. But I will be relating it to something. I may say, because yesterday it was so cold and rainy, so it's very pleasant today. It's a very nice day today because the sun is shining. So in so many ways, we're dealing all the time with relative truth. Truth that is related to us or related to something else. So it is very difficult to think in terms of the absolute truth. We can use the word, but there's nothing we can refer to that's absolute. We can say this is absolutely the nicest place in all of Bombay. But someone will come along and say, well, actually, it's relatively nice, but here's a nice place. This place has this and that and that and this and so on and so forth. It's also nice. So there is some competition. But the absolute truth has no competition. This is the position. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita that we actually have no experience, direct experience of anything that doesn't have a cause. And as long as there's a cause, it's relative. It's related to that cause. So therefore, we have to very, very carefully hear this subject matter to get a new concept, a new understanding of what is the truth, different than the one that we previously and presently have. We have to change our conception. So I was also thinking about this, that mostly what motivates people to act? What do you think? In a simple way, what motivates somebody to do something? Desires. Desires. Anything else motivates people? The result of an action motivates them? Yes? Happiness. Seeking happiness motivates them? Yes? Avoiding distress motivates somebody to act? Yes? But when they act for happiness and they act to avoid distress, what motivates them to do that particular activity? Perception. Perception. And what is perception based on? Yes, it's to some degree experience. What else? There's the experience, but there's something else more subtle than that. Faith. Faith, yes. But we're speaking now on the intellect. Of course, faith is relevant. Everyone has faith in whomsoever or whatsoever they're doing. But the point I wanted to get to was an idea. Right? You want to avoid distress, you want to achieve happiness, so you're looking and somebody gives you an idea, this is very good. You try it and if you find, oh, this is very good, then you continue to have faith in that. But there must be some ideas, otherwise we would all just sit here. But everyone is busy doing things. So there is some idea behind that or some plan. And from that plan comes the action. Comes the system. Now the world is so systematized. This comes from some idea. And another word for idea is conception. You have a concept of what is what. This is this and this is that. And because of the concept, you act. So Srila Prabhupada was very fond of saying this one word. What is the word? Yes. The whole world is working under the influence of a misconception. So here we are, we're coming to the absolute truth in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we're trying to get a proper conception. And when we have a proper conception, then our activities will follow. And if you see that someone's activities are irregular in terms of the absolute truth, it's because they have a misconception. Ignorance means misconception. Ignorance is the power that blesses you with a misconception. Ignorance, they say, and is a saying, ignorance is bliss. Because as soon as you're ignorant, then you can think, whatever I want to do, I can do this. But you'll be acting under the influence of a misconception. And a misconception means you're not going to get what you want. If I have a misdirection, I want to go to Juhu. And somebody tells me to go on a particular road, but it doesn't lead to Juhu, then I'm not going to get there. So similarly, if I have a misconceived idea of how to be happy or how to avoid unhappiness, I won't be successful. I won't be happy and I won't avoid distress. But if I have the proper concept, then these things are possible. So here Srila Prabhupada is arguing on this point of the absolute truth, a proper conception. Now this is a 2-page purport and it's very intellectual. So I'll go a little further and I think it would be appropriate to stop and somebody with more intellectual ability can continue with the second half of this particular purport. So I'll read the next paragraph and stop. Although the impersonalists and personalists fight with one another, they focus upon the same Parabrahman, the same absolute truth. In the Yoga Shastras, Krishna is described as follows. Krishnam Pishangam Bharam Ambujikshanam Chaturbujam Sankhya Gadadyudayudham. Thus the pleasing appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's bodily features, his limbs and his dress are being described here. The Sankhya Shastra, however, denies the existence of the Lord's transcendental form. So the Yoga Shastras describe his form for meditation. The Sankhya philosophy does not. The Sankhya Shastras says that the Supreme Absolute Truth has no hands, no legs, and no name. Yamanam rupa guna pani padam akchashur ashrotram ekam advitam api nama rupadikam nasti. So here Srila Prabhupada, you see how every time he's quoting something so that we may not be so learned, but he wants us to be confident that he himself has evidence for everything he's saying. He's not just saying, it seems like, it feels like, or some people sometimes think in this way. He wants everything to be authoritative. The Vedic mantras say, Apani Pado Javano Grahita. The Supreme Lord has no legs and hands, but he can accept whatever is offered to him. So here is a Vedic aphorism. He can accept whatever is offered to him. As soon as somebody can accept something, we have to say, even I'm saying, somebody accepts something. Even if you said it, you got very impersonal, said it can accept something. Now this cannot accept something. This particular it cannot accept something. So even if we like to be impersonal in our gender, as soon as you say there's volition, there's initiative, you're talking about a conscious entity. Because an unconscious, something made of matter has no volition. So if he can accept something, then personality immediately occurs. And so Srila Prabhupada will argue many times this point. You're saying he has no hands, he has no legs, he has no face, but he can accept something, implies that he has no hands, no leg, no face like we have. Otherwise, why would you say, but there is acceptance going on? So actually, such statements accept that the Supreme Lord has hands and legs, but deny that he has material hands and legs. So this is, again, the Vaishnava conclusion. The Vaishnava absolute truth can include everything, even the impersonal. But the impersonal cannot include the personal. Because it denies the personal, it's incomplete. This is the argument of the Vaishnavas. He has no material hands and legs, that is why the Absolute is called Aprakrita. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has a Satchit Ananda Vigraha, a form of eternity, knowledge and bliss, not a material form. The Sankhyites or the Jnanis deny the material form, and the devotees also know very well that the Absolute Truth, Bhagavan, has no material form. So here, Srila Prabhupada is going to bring a unity, as in this verse, it's describing that there are two parties. In the verse that we're studying, the theists and the atheists. The theists accept the supersoul and find a spiritual cause through mystical yoga. The Sankhyaites merely analyze material elements and come to a conclusion of impersonalism. Therefore, they do not accept a supreme cause whether Bhagavan Paramatma or even Brahman. Instead, he is preoccupied with the superfluous external activities of material nature. Ultimately, however, here is this point, ultimately, however, both parties demonstrate. Srila Prabhupada is not saying they both speak about, he's saying their activities demonstrate. One is saying, yes, it is true, there is form, and the other is saying, no form. They both saying form. From their contradictory arguments, they're demonstrating the presence of form. So ultimately, they both demonstrate the absolute truth, because although they offer opposing statements, their object is the same ultimate cause. They're both looking at the same thing and coming to different conclusions. They are both approaching the same Supreme Brahman to whom I offer my respectful obeisances. So when we hear these arguments, sometimes Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur apologize almost, and also Krishnadas Kaviraj, for these very analytical subject matters. They give like an apology. Please forgive us for having to study this. But they tell us that it sharpens the intelligence, so therefore it is good. It is just like when you take a meal, right? You take something bitter. So everyone knows that the sweet is the culmination. So Radha Gopinath are the sweet. But something bitter is there to stimulate the digestion, so that when the sweet comes, you can digest it very heartily. So these are some points on this particular half of the section of this particular purport. So today also is the disappearance day of Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj sets a particular example within our Guru Parampara, and that is one of total akinchana, complete and total, 100%, nothing to do with this world. Although walking, possessed of a body, and walking here and there, first of all, it is said that he was born in Bangladesh, now Bangladesh, and he had a grihastha ashram earlier in his life, and I've heard that he was a shopkeeper, but nothing much is known of this. But then he went to Vrindavan, and there he took Babaji Vesh. He accepted a Babaji guru. And later he came to Navadvip, Mayapur. And he lived there in a very extraordinary way. It is not that he lived alone. He was always surrounded by people. Many of them had inferior motives and desires. But because he was like, you could say, like Jad Bharat, he didn't care. So because he didn't care what they were thinking, good or bad. So he was very, very akinchana. But when somebody would come to him, particularly to ask him something, then he was very interesting in his responses. Because what he didn't like, he really didn't like, was he didn't like religious hypocrisy. So he would point it out in his own ways over and over again. For example, sometimes a very wealthy man would come to see him, and he would ask him, please, oh Babaji Maharaj, if you could come and bless our house. We're having some big yajna and we would like your presence. It would make everything so auspicious. So please, please, you come. And then he would suggest to them, I have a better idea. Why don't you just leave your house and come and sit down here with me and just chant Hare Krishna. And the gentleman, wealthy gentleman, he would sometimes very quickly change the subject, and perhaps he'd be very quick to leave also, because that was not at all what was on his mind. And one time it is said that one gentleman who was just about to enter into the grihastha ashram came to visit Babaji Maharaj to seek his blessings and said to him, I am just about to get married and I wish your blessings and some guidelines. And he said to him, yes, he said, every day you should offer obeisances to your wife. So this is unusual, as everyone knows, in Hindu Vedic culture. So why should he offer obeisances to his wife? Because you should see your wife not as your dasi. She's not your servant. Then she should offer obeisances to you. But you should see her as Krishna dasi. She's Krishna's servant. And then, because she's not your servant, she's Krishna's servant, you should offer obeisances to her. So this, of course, is another difficult, a different conception. Everyone who gets married generally is thinking that now I will have some happiness. I will avoid some unhappiness. But he was giving a transcendental version to this. And sometimes someone would come to him and say, "Oh, Babaji Maharaj, I'm looking to purchase something, some land in holy Navadvip Dham." And he would say to them, "How? How on earth can you purchase land in this dham?" And he would look astonished and then he would say, "Do you understand the value of one particle of dust of the holy dham? What is the all the Vaikuntha planets cannot pay what is the value of this one particle of dust, and you're thinking you're going to occupy something here, do some service here? In this transcendental abode." So these were his very, very high concepts. And also we know, of course, that he was the guru of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but he didn't give him an easy time. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was also a Kinchana, completely transcendentally situated. But he made his appearance in this world as a very intellectually brilliant personality, who was like a walking encyclopedia. And Gaukeshwar Das Babaji, his mood was completely nothing to do with this world. Didn't know, didn't care, didn't want anything of this world. He would like play, you would see, like a child. He would take his deities, put them in the water, he ate practically nothing, bathe them in the Ganga, talk to them. So many different emotional, extraordinary things that he would do. Nothing to do with anything, profit, adoration, distinction of this world. So when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur humbly approached him on the order of his father, he many times said, no, I cannot accept you. I am just a fool. I know nothing. You are so brilliant. You have such a brilliant intellect." And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was brought to the point where he was prepared, "Next, if he doesn't accept me, I'll end my life. Because I've tried in every way to get him to accept me as his disciple and he refuses." So then Srila Gaukeshwar Das Babaji Maharaj accepted him as his only disciple. At the time when Srila Gaukeshwar Das Babaji Maharaj left this world, he had, as I said, many people around him who were in Babaji Vesh, but not necessarily strictly serious Babajis. So when he left this world, there a debate broke out, what should be done with his transcendental form. And some of these persons who were near him, they commented that Babaji Maharaj has said many times that when I leave this world, my useless, worthless body should be just dragged, you should drag through the dust of Sri Navadvip Dham and just place dust over this useless, worthless form. So they were considering this, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur intervened. And he was very, very strictly said, "His Guru Maharaj's body is not to be placed down like this. I should carry his body on my head, his transcendental form." And he glorified Gaukeshwar Das Babaji Maharaj in so many wonderful ways. But then a debate broke out between all of these Babajis, who had the authority to place his body in samadhi. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was extremely astute and extremely sober, very somber actually, because of his weight of knowledge and his particular perspective. He said to them all, he said, because he was like a lion. He saw hypocrisy, just like a lion sees an innocent little deer crossing here, and a lion will automatically get down, even a cat You watch a cat. When a cat sees a mouse, it immediately crouches down and bends down and starts very stealthily proceeding towards the cat or the bird or the mouse. Similarly, a lion. So as soon as he saw some hypocrisy, he was immediately had his claws out, ready to attack that hypocrisy. But just as a cat can be so ruthless with a small mouse, we could say this poor little mouse is going to meet its destruction. But a cat also can be very, very affectionate to its kittens because it has these two sides. Similarly, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, with the devotees, he was extremely affectionate. But with anyone who had any hypocrisy in their heart, he would go straight for it. He was called the Nrisinga Guru because he would go straight for that and point that out. So he asked them, he said, he pointed out, if anyone here has had no connection with any women within the last, and he gave, first of all, a long time, the last 3 weeks, then they are suitable to touch the transcendental body of my Guru Maharaj. And if they touch and they have not been so pure, if they're cheating, then they will be destroyed. And no one came forward from the community of Babaji's and others. And then he said again, and he shortened the time, and he made it extremely short, the time amount that they should have been pure in their actions, and still nobody came forward. And he said, therefore, I alone will take this transcendental body of my Guru Maharaj on my head and place him in samadhi. So he was placed first in samadhi on the Navadvip side of the Ganga, and then with the movement of the Ganga towards Navadvip, his transcendental samadhi was brought intact across my boat to the Chaitanya Mat, and he was placed again in samadhi by the side of Shamakund and Radhakund in the Chaitanya Mat in Mayapur Dham. So Gaukishore Das Babaji sets a particular example, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sets another one. Gaukishore Das Babaji Maharaj, nothing to do with this world at all. Not interested. Not showing a good example even. Nothing. And then Bhaktivinod Thakur, 100% to do with this world. He's a government man under the British government, showing how somebody who wants to live in this world and practice Krishna consciousness and work in this world, how they should see this as their example. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he sets the example for those who wish to take up the brahmachari celibacy or the sannyasashram. So three different brilliant shining examples are there in one after another in line. And then, of course, after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comes Srila Prabhupada, who shows all of us, if you would like to spread Krishna consciousness to every country of the world, this is the way to do it. So he shows us an example. Of course, we can't even begin to imagine following his pure, perfect example. But he has little posts for anyone who'd like to help him with his work. He's generous. He's not saying, this is only my work. He's saying, as many people as come forward, I can give them a part of what I am trying to do. So this is Srila Prabhupada's mercy, that we can connect with these wonderful personalities from these previous times and see and learn something from them, and also get their blessings that come down to us through their various examples, through Srila Prabhupada, and then through Srila Prabhupada's disciples. And then we can take this and we can give this in turn to others, because this Krishna consciousness movement is going to go on for hundreds and hundreds of years. Hundreds and hundreds of years means that none of us will be here. After the first 100, probably none of us will still be here. But the Krishna consciousness movement will go on, and people will be worshipping Radha Gopinath for hundreds and hundreds of years. So we have our opportunity for service right now, and we should do it as nicely as we can. But it will go on, whether we do or not, Srila Prabhupada said. Whether you take this wonderful opportunity or not, Lord Chaitanya will find someone else, and it will continue on, because it is his mission. It is not our work. All right, thank you very much. If anyone has any questions. Srila Gokishodas Babaji Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi.